This episode of The Y-Files is brought to you by Delete Me. On April 21st, 2025, Pope Francis died. According to one of the most famous prophecies in church history, Francis was the final pope. After him, Rome burns and Judgment Day begins. 17 days later, white smoke rose from the Sistine Chapel. Robert Prevost stepped onto the balcony as Leo XIV, the first American pope. Rome was fine. The prophecy failed. But did it? Because buried inside the original Latin, there's a countdown. The list doesn't end with a pope. It ends during a year. That year is 2027.
It is I, Gerald. We never met.
What's with the getup?
And a wig cost me $40, human. 40. You couldn't give me 5 seconds?
What is going on?
I'm in the wetness protection program. I've been compromised. They found me.
Who found you?
Well, I can't say his name on an open line. Let's just call him the sushi chef. I gave his restaurant 1 star, and I stand by it. You don't put goldfish crackers on the appetizer menu and call it ironic. That's a hate crime. Well, he found out, and now I'm a marked fish.
I don't think he actually...
Well, he said he knows where to find fresh fish, human. That's a death threat.
That's a menu description.
Exactly what he wants you to think. So I went underground. New identity, new location. I even got a handler.
Is that Wyatt?
That's Agent Hardwood. He's a professional.
Yeah, I need a large pepperoni to the safe house.
Name? Hecklefish.
H-E-C-K.
What are you doing, you moron? Use the alias.
Sorry.
Gerald.
Gerald Trout.
Yeah, same address.
Your cover lasted about 90 seconds.
Yeah, this is my 3rd safe house this week. The last one got blown when Wyatt posted a selfie with me. He captioned it, "Garden my guy, # secret location." He even tagged the address. It's so hard to find good beaver these days.
Look, hiding doesn't work if your information is still all over the internet. Data brokers have your name, phone number, addresses. Every time you move, it just updates. You need to Delete Me.
Whoa. Is there a sponsor hiding in the safe house?
You betcha.
Data brokers legally collect and sell your name, phone number, address, even the names of your relatives. That can expose you to risks like scams, phishing attempts, harassment, and doxing. And it's not just a privacy issue. Earlier this year, a handwritten list of people search websites reportedly surfaced during the investigation into the Minnesota lawmaker shootings. That's why I trust Delete Me to help protect my privacy online. Delete Me is a hands-free service that removes your personal information from hundreds of data brokers and people search sites, and they get to work fast. Within 7 days, you get a privacy report showing exactly what they found and the removal requests they started. But Delete Me doesn't stop there. They continuously remove your data using their own technology, not outsourcing to third parties, so your information stays protected over time. And if you need extra help, Delete Me has real privacy advisors who handle custom requests. I signed up after receiving fan mail at my home address. Delete Me found my information, started the removal process, and kept me updated through the privacy report. I could see which sites had already removed my information, and the dashboard tracked the status of every removal. That gave me real peace of mind, especially knowing they'd been named Wirecutter's #1 data removal service. Get 20% off Delete Me consumer plans when you go to joindeleteme.com/thewyfiles and use promo code THEWYFILES at checkout, or scan the QR code on screen.
Yeah, so Delete Me gets rid of all my info online. No more moving, no more aliases.
Nope. Sign up for Delete Me and you can go back to being yourself.
Yeah, actually, I think I'm going to keep this Gerald thing going for a bit.
Why?
Well, Gerald doesn't have 3 ex-wives, human. Gerald doesn't pay child support. Gerald is a free man.
Smooth.
I'm kidding, baby. There is no Gerald. I'm in Dutch now. If I don't make it, scatter my scales at the Bellagio fountain. That's where Gertie and I had our first date. She drank from it, I swam in it. Magic.
One late night in Rome in 1139, an archbishop knelt in prayer near the tomb of St. Peter. He was a long way from home, and his heart was heavy. Malachy traveled from Ireland to Rome to support the new pope after years of chaos. Innocent II spent 8 years fighting a rival for control of the church. It began as an internal political feud, but escalated into a military campaign that drew in most of Europe. Innocent won the war, but it left a scar. He saw firsthand that the papacy could be destroyed, and the entire church with it. That night, Maliki prayed, not just for the Pope, for all popes, for the church itself. Then, God answered. Maliki felt a vibration growing in his body, like electricity, but the energy was coming from him. Then he had a vision.
It's such a good vibration. It's such a sweet sensation.
How'd we get there?
Maliki Mac and a Funky Bunch.
Okay, can you not make heretical jokes during my setup?
No, my jokes are hysterical.
Heretical.
What I say?
Maliki saw pope after pope, man after man, century after century. But not names or faces, images. A castle above a river, an eagle with open claws, a sliver of a moon. An image for every pope who would ever live. Maliki made a list of the visions, each a short phrase in Latin. 112 popes, one after another. Then one final vision. A city on seven hills burning. The end of the world. Judgment Day. He gave the manuscript to Pope Innocent II as a comfort. The Pope, who almost lost the papacy, now had proof that the line of Peter runs unbroken until the end of the world. But a list that ends with the apocalypse isn't a comfort, it's a countdown. Pope Innocent knew how dangerous this was. He locked the manuscript in the Vatican archives and never spoke of it again. Nobody knew it existed. Then, in 1590, somebody found it. Hidden for 450 years, 74 popes came and went during that time. St. Maliki was right about all of them. In September 1590, Pope Urban VII died just 12 days after his election, so the cardinals returned to Rome to choose a new pope. But then a document was found that said the elections never mattered. 4.5 centuries earlier, a saint made a list. Every pope was already predicted. A list was terrifying enough, but what really upset the church was how the list ended. The cardinals needed to know if the list was real, so they turned to Alfonso Chacon. He was the most respected papal historian alive. He literally wrote a book called The Lives of the Popes. If anyone could verify this list, it was him.
The lives of two popes, gravity, y tu mama también. I had no idea how prolific he was.
Chacon, not Cuaron.
This is papa. Yo digo papa. Let's call the whole thing off.
So Chacon started checking the phrases that Maliki used to identify each pope. Each phrase is called a motto, a few words that capture the man. The first motto is Ex Castro Tiberis, from a castle on the Tiber. The first pope on the list was Celestine II, elected in 1143. He was born in Città di Castello, Castletown, on the banks of the Tiber River. Maliki was right. The second entry says Inimicus Expulsus, the enemy driven out. That was Lucius II, a pope at war with Rome's own Senate. They stripped him of the title. When Lucius led an assault to take it back, he was stoned to death. Maliki was right again. Another is Sus in Cribro, a pig in a sieve. That sounds like a hard motto to pin on a priest, but Pope Urban III's family name was Crivelli, and the Italian word for sieve is Crivello, and the Crivelli family crest included a pig.
See, this is my problem with visions. You're God. You're omnipotent. Why symbols? Just send names, dates, a spreadsheet.
Prophecy doesn't really work like a spreadsheet.
That's why it took him 400 years to solve it. One tab, two columns. Pope, yeah. But no, you gotta give me pig in a sleeve.
Civ.
Whatever.
He checked 74 entries. Maliki was right 74 times. This was a big deal in 1590. The Reformation was tearing Christianity in half. Protestant preachers called the Pope the Antichrist and said the papacy was living its final days. And here was a 450-year-old prophecy promising 38 more popes to come. Maliki's document was a guarantee of survival. The same list that comforted a pope in 1139 now comforted the whole church. In 1595, Benedictine monk Arnold Vian published the full list so the world could read it. Three columns, the motto, the pope it matched, and Chacon's notes. But Chacon's notes stop at entry number 74, Urban VII. It was 1590, so Chacon could only solve the popes of the past. The rest of the list predicts the future.
Oh, dear God, this guy had the Catholic sports almanac. He could have made a fortune, but he public domained it.
You rooted for Biff, didn't you?
Doc Brown did business for terrorists, was best friends with a teen boy, and created God knows how many dangerous timelines. And Biff is the villain.
When you put it that way.
Justitio pro Biff. Put that in your prophecy and smoke it.
And at the very bottom of the list, the future ends. The last entry isn't a motto, it's a full paragraph, and names the final pope, Peter the Roman, the man on the throne when Rome burns. But even though Malachy predicted 74 popes in order, there were still skeptics, so they looked into St. Malachy to see if he made any other predictions that came true. They didn't like what they found. In the 12th century, the Shinna family controlled the office of Archbishop of Armagh, the highest Catholic seat in Ireland, and they ran it like a monarchy. The title passed from father to son, and most of them weren't even priests.
An office you inherit, don't need qualifications for, and can't be fired from. So, Congress.
Armed clans defended the arrangement, and challenging it was a good way to die. Malachy challenged it. He took the office, pushed the family out, and survived. Then he did something nobody ever does after winning a war. He walked away, back to the work he cared about, rebuilding monasteries, reforming the clergy, tying the Irish church closer to Rome.
Tying the Irish closer to the church? That's like trying to find a tidal link between Fiery Lamb, Vindaloo, and diarrhea. That's like trying to find a tidal link between petty theft and Florida. That's like trying to find a tidal link between cocaine and a business idea. Yeah, bang the three for you. Take your pick.
You already know why Malachy went to Rome, and you know what he did there. Here's what happened on the road. On the way south, he stopped at Clairvaux Abbey. Its abbot, Bernard, had so much influence, even popes asked him for advice. Kings read his letters. Crusaders listened when he spoke. Bernard was a monk at a small monastery in France. How does that man get this kind of power? Because Saint Bernard was an early patron and leader of the Knights Templar, a good friend to have. Malachy arrived with no army, no wealth, and no political office, but Bernard treated him like an equal anyway. The men became close friends. Years later, back in Ireland, the monks asked Malachy where he would die. Malachy said Clairvaux. They asked him when he would die. Malachy said All Souls Day, the Day of the Dead. In 1148, Malachy headed back to Rome, but he never made it. By the time he reached Clairvaux, he was burning with fever. He died at Clairvaux on November 2nd, All Souls Day. Just as he predicted. He was 54 years old.
Again, back to the spreadsheets. He knew when he was going to die. The guy got a fever. If I find out he substitute taught at a kindergarten a week before...
You're missing the point.
Guy predicts his shoe is going to smell at 1140. So he steps on a horse he grumped at March and says, see?
Bernard wrote a biography of St. Malachy. He said, call it a wish or call it a prophecy. Either way, Malachy was right. That's the man behind the list. And that's why Rome believed it. When Malachy predicted something, it happened. He became the first Irish saint ever canonized by a pope. But everything Chacon verified was already history. From 1595 forward, the mottos had to predict the future. Again, people were skeptical, especially about the motto that described a bronze eagle dragging a pope away. But 200 years later, that's exactly what happened. That bronze eagle belonged to Napoleon Bonaparte. And before the eagle was finished, the list would name two popes in a row. The first was Pius VI. His motto reads Peregrinos Apostolicos, the apostolic traveler. During the French Revolution, troops stormed Rome and pulled Pius VI off his throne. He died in 1799, a prisoner in the south of France, the apostolic traveler buried far from home. The very next motto reads Aquila Rapax, the rapacious eagle. Rapacious means greedy, aggressive, and never satisfied. But Malachy wasn't describing the new pope, Pius VII. He described the man coming for him. Napoleon wanted the pope to crown him emperor as proof of God's will. Pius agreed on one condition. Napoleon and his wife Josephine never had a church wedding, and the pope refused to crown a couple living in sin. So the day before his coronation, Napoleon got married in secret. Then at the ceremony, he took the crown out of the pope's hands and placed it on his own head. That wasn't enough for Napoleon. Nothing ever was. He decided the pope should answer to him. Pius objected, and Napoleon was excommunicated. Napoleon sent soldiers into the papal palace in the middle of the night. They arrested the pope, dragged him out of Rome, and held him prisoner for years. And those soldiers marched under Napoleon's standard, a bronze eagle. The rapacious eagle took the pope, just as Malachy predicted 670 years earlier. The list continued. Cruxte Cruce, cross from a cross, for Pius IX. When the royal house of Savoy took Rome, it stripped the pope of his lands. It ended 1,000 years of papal rule over central Italy. The emblem on every Savoy banner was a white cross. Pius IX lost his kingdom to a cross. The next motto was Lumen Cielo, a light in the sky, for Leo XIII. On his family crest was a comet streaking across a blue sky. Then the list turned dark. Religio depopulata, religion laid waste. That was for Benedict XV. He took the throne in September 1914, just after the start of the First World War. Benedict begged Europe for peace and Europe ignored him. Catholic nations fought other Catholic nations. Churches became hospitals. Priests climbed into the trenches and died in them. By the end of the war, millions of Christians were dead. And the Russian Revolution happened at the same time. The new government seized the churches, shot the priests, and declared war on God himself. Religion laid waste, on a scale nobody in 1595 could have imagined. But somehow, Malachy did. When the list was made public, instead of dismissing or denouncing it, the church started to follow it. In the 17th and 18th centuries, popes had their own mottos stamped onto their coronation medals. The prophecy described the popes, and the popes were happy to wear the prophecy. And in 1958, one cardinal tried to step into the prophecy himself. That year, the next motto was Pastor et Nauta, the shepherd and the sailor. Cardinal Francis Spellman of New York read those words and made a plan. He rented a boat, filled it with sheep, and sailed up and down the Tiber River, a shepherd and a sailor. Spellman used the motto as a campaign slogan.
That is the greatest campaign stunt I've ever heard. Boat, sheep, river, 0 notes.
It didn't work. The cardinals passed on it.
Because he peaked too early. You don't do the sheep boat before the conclave. You do the sheep boat after. Amateur hour. I could have won that election.
Okay.
Human, go fetch me a pointy hat and start calling me Your Eminence.
Hard pass.
Hard pass, Your Eminence.
Instead, they elected Angelo Roncalli as Pope John XXIII. Roncalli was the Patriarch of Venice, a city built on water and filled with sailors. As Pope, he called himself a shepherd and urged the church to act like one. The man who chased the prophecy lost. The man who ignored it became the shepherd and the sailor. For Paul VI, Flos Florum, the flower of flowers. His family's crest carried 3 fleur-de-lis, 3 flowers. From the half moon, for Pope John Paul I. Born in Belluno, the beautiful moon, he was elected just as the moon reached its last quarter. His reign lasted 33 days, one half moon to the next. Pope after pope, the list kept hitting. By the end of the 20th century, only 2 mottos were left before Peter the Roman. The next motto was De Labore Solis, the labor of the sun. Malachy was right about that one too. On May 18, 1920, a partial solar eclipse crossed the southern hemisphere. That same day, Karol Wojtyła was born in Poland. He became Pope John Paul II. John Paul led the church for more than 26 years. He took a bullet in St. Peter's Square and survived. He outlasted communism in Eastern Europe. He traveled farther than any pope in history. He died on April 2, 2005. His funeral was 6 days later. And on that day, another eclipse, the labor of the sun. The last motto before Peter the Roman is Gloria Olivae, the glory of the olive. In 2005, Joseph Ratzinger was elected and chose the name Benedict. The Benedictines have an order called the Olivetans, their symbol, an olive branch. Malachy was right again. The list was down to one final name, Peter the Roman. After him, nothing. But in 2013, Benedict shocked the world by resigning, the first pope to ever step down in 600 years. Suddenly, a storm hit Rome and lightning struck St. Peter's Dome. Twice. The list was taunting them, because Benedict officially left office on February 28th, the feast day of St. Romanus. The throne of Peter was empty on the day of the Romans. 12 days later, the cardinals entered the conclave, and the whole world was watching for a Peter. Most people expected Cardinal Peter Turkson of Ghana to be elected. Instead, they chose a long shot, Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Argentina, the first Jesuit pope, first pope from the Americas. He chose the name Francis. So Malachy was finally wrong? Well, not so fast. Peter the Roman was right there inside the new pope's name. Francis took his name from St. Francis of Assisi, and the father of St. Francis was called Pietro. Peter Bergoglio was the son of Italian immigrants, Roman blood on the throne of Rome. The new pope didn't need to find the name found him. And when Francis stepped onto the balcony, he fulfilled the prophecy. Peter the Roman, the last pope, and after him, nothing. The prophecy gives Peter the Roman more than a motto. It tells us what happens during his reign.
In the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, there will sit Peter the Roman, who will pasture his sheep in many tribulations. When these things are finished, the city of seven hills will be destroyed, and the dreadful judge will judge his people. The end.
The city of seven hills is Rome. Peter guides the church through one final persecution, then the city falls, then comes judgment. You'd expect the Catholic Church to have an opinion about a text that predicts its own annihilation. It doesn't. In 400 years, the Vatican has never condemned the prophecy of the popes, never endorsed it, never denounced it, never ruled on it at all. And this is a church with opinions. When the Da Vinci Code came out, the Vatican told Catholics not to read it. A thriller about a fictional bloodline got condemned. A prophecy describing the destruction of Rome and the death of the church got four centuries of silence. Silence is also an answer. And Malachy wasn't the only one who saw a pope inside a ruined city. In 1909, Pope Pius X collapsed. He came back with a terrifying vision. A future pope fleeing Rome, climbing over the dead bodies of his own priests to escape the Vatican. 8 years later, the Virgin Mary appeared to three shepherd children in a field outside Fatima, Portugal. She showed them hell. She said another world war was coming, and she gave them one final vision, one the world wouldn't learn for decades. The third secret was written down in 1944 and locked inside the Vatican. It stayed sealed until the year 2000. The vision starts with an angel holding a flaming sword. The blade caught fire, ready to burn the world. But the flames died out when they touched the light shining from Mary's hand. Then the angel pointed at the earth and cried out one word three times. Penance, penance, penance. Then the children saw the Holy Father. He crossed the city in ruins, praying for the souls of the corpses he passed. Bishops, priests, and ordinary believers followed him up a mountain toward a large wooden cross. At the top, soldiers opened fire. The Pope fell. The clergy fell. The soldiers killed the believers behind them. The vision ends with two angels gathering the blood of the martyrs and sprinkling it over the souls making their way to God. Three different centuries, three different visions. All of them saw the same thing. A Pope walking through the corpses of his own church while the city falls around him. During the reign of Francis, the prophecy seemed to be coming true. In March 2020, the pandemic closed churches around the world. One rainy day, Francis stood alone in St. Peter's Square, prayed to an empty city. No crowd, no choir. One old man in white, alone in the rain, in a square built to hold hundreds of thousands. It looked like the end of the world. He wasn't exactly climbing over corpses, but there were a lot of people dying from COVID.
Hold on. Did you say dying from or dying with?
Let's not do this again.
Fine, fine. We can discuss again in 2 weeks after we flatten the curve.
War came back to Europe. Churches burned in Africa and Asia, and Christians died for attending them. Inside the Vatican, scandal after scandal, and people kept leaving the church. Whatever many tribulations was supposed to mean, Francis was living it. And across town, in the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls, the countdown hangs in plain sight. Every pope has a portrait there. A ring of faces circling the church from St. Peter to today, with the current pope's portrait lit by a spotlight. They say that when the wall runs out of room for portraits, the world ends. Under Francis, the spotlight was near the end of the row. Francis led the church through 12 years of tribulation. Then on April 21st, 2025, he died. That should have triggered the apocalypse. But Rome didn't burn. Judgment Day didn't come. Instead, a conclave gathered to choose another pope. Scholars were relieved, until they took a closer look at the original prophecy. 400 years ago, the text was published with a misprint. One small error that changed everything. The end of the world prophecy isn't counting down popes at all. It's counting down years, and the clock is still ticking. On May 8th, 2025, white smoke rose over the Vatican, and instead of a doomed pope stepping over bodies, a man from Chicago walked onto the balcony and waved. Cardinal Robert Prevost took the name Leo XIV, the first pope from the United States. But he wasn't called Peter, and Rome was still standing. Prophecy researchers were relieved but also confused. Why were the predictions so accurate except for the last, most important one? The answer was a misprint in the last two lines. In the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, there will sit Peter the Roman, who will pasture his sheep in many tribulations. But in the original Latin, that sentence is actually two. In the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, there will sit. Then comes a period. Peter the Roman begins on the next line. For centuries, everyone read those two lines as one sentence. That traces to 1624, when editor Thomas Messingham reprinted the prophecy and merged the two paragraphs into one. His version became the standard, and that original break was forgotten. But splitting those two sentences means any number of popes can sit during the final persecution before Peter the Roman appears. Leo didn't break the prophecy, he filled the gap. The count can also change. The original list wasn't numbered. And it includes several antipopes. An antipope is a rival who challenged the legitimate pope. Remove those, and every later motto moves up one place. In 2021, a German historian ran the count again and removed three antipopes. Under his system, Leo XIV isn't the last pope. Two more come after him. And there's another way to change the count. When Benedict resigned in 2013, Francis was elected. But Benedict stayed in the Vatican as Pope Emeritus for years. Some argue that Benedict's resignation was never valid under church law. If that's true, Benedict stayed the true pope until his death in 2022, and Francis doesn't count at all, and Malachy's list still has room. Then there's 2027. Buried in the middle of the list is a motto that reads, Axis in meditate signi, the axle in the middle of the sign. An axle is the center of a wheel, the point that everything turns around. The motto belonged to Pope Sixtus V, who took office in 1585. Celestine II, the first pope on the list, took the throne in 1143. Then 442 years later, we get to the middle, the axle, in 1585. Count forward another 442 years, the count ends in 2027. And Sixtus carried a picture of the countdown everywhere he went. His coat of arms shows a lion with an axle laid across its middle. For 400 years, nobody thought much about it, a lion on a shield. Then in 2025, the church elected a pope who took the name Leo. There's the lion. The prophecy pointed to Leo. And it may have pointed at him twice. Remember why Francis fit the final motto? The son of Italian immigrants, Roman blood on the throne of Rome? Now look closer at the man from Chicago. His grandfather was born in Sicily, and his name was Rigatano. When he came to America, he changed his name to Prevost. The new pope carries Italian blood and a name that isn't his. Maybe Peter the Roman isn't coming. Maybe he's already on the throne. And Francis behaved like a man who knew. On his first morning as pope, he didn't go to St. Peter's. He crossed the city to the Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore and knelt inside. That church holds the tomb of Pope Sixtus V, the axle. 12 years later, when Francis died, he skipped the Vatican crypt where popes are buried and chose Santa Maria Maggiore for his own grave. Peter the Roman rests under the same roof as the pope whose motto starts the countdown. Even the sky has plans for 2027. On August 2nd of that year, the moon crosses the sun over the Mediterranean and holds there for 6 minutes. That's a long eclipse. Astronomers already call it the eclipse of the century, and its shadow runs straight across the old Roman world, Spain, North Africa, Egypt. Malachy's list once marked a pope with the labor of the sun. Now the list ends when the sun goes dark. The pieces fit. The prophecy was never about the man. It was about the year. As I write this, we have about 6 months left until the year of the apocalypse. I always felt like we were in the final days, so now that they're here, go out and enjoy them. But after that, ye shall prepare to be judged. A medieval saint sees the future. The Vatican hides his warning. 4 centuries later, the world finds it, and the greatest historian in Rome proved it never misses. The prophecy of the popes is one of the all-time greatest stories. But is it true?
Yep.
Well, let's look at the public record.
No.
Malachy's vision. The earliest version of that story appeared in 1871, not 1139. The origin story of the prophecy is younger than the telegram.
I don't like this scene. Can we go back to the lightning scene? The lightning scene was fun. This feels like school.
Bernard of Clairvaux wrote a detailed biography of Malachy. He did write that he predicted his own death, but he doesn't mention predictions about popes. In fact, nobody does. There's no mention of the prophecy for another 400 years. When Vian published the list in 1595, he didn't claim it was found in the Vatican archive. He never said where it came from, just that people wanted to see it. It is true that Vian included Chacon's comments to prove the predictions. Small problem. The only accurate predictions already happened. The early models fit because Chacon made them fit. After 1590, precise names and titles became vague phrases like country animal and delight of the cross. These models are vague because Chacon ran out of history. That is, if Chacon actually had anything to do with the list at all. Chacon was a famous scholar who specialized in manuscripts and the papacy. He was alive when the list was released. His name was on it. But he never mentioned it. Not ever. Some say his silence proves he had nothing to do with it. So why didn't he refute it? Well, this is the 16th century. It's not like he could file a copyright claim. He was a serious historian and a priest. He would have distanced himself from the list, not called attention to it. But we're not at a dead end. The real author did leave clues. In 1557, the church historian Onofrio Vanpino published a history of every pope. His book contained a handful of mistakes, and the prophecy repeats those same mistakes. Take the motto for John XXII, the bony shoemaker. The printed answer says his father made shoes. His father was a banker. The shoemaker mistake comes from Panvino's book, and the prophecy used it. The 2027 number is easily debunked. Sixtus is supposed to be the middle of the list. He's the axle. But he's number 73. That's nowhere near the middle. So even if you believe that Sixtus is the axle, we have 20 or more popes to go. That could mean over 100 years. As for the lion, there's been 13 popes named Leo before this one. Put a lion on a list of 100 mottos, and sooner or later, you'll get a lion. Popes usually choose their second name in honor of their favorite saint or to honor someone in the Bible they admire. That's a limited selection of names. But one name they never choose is Peter. It would be an insult to take the name of the first pope who was chosen by Jesus himself. Remember the famous line from Matthew 16, "And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it." No pope would elevate himself to Peter. It's just not done. So don't hold your breath for a Peter the Roman. There are some eerie coincidences, though. John XXIII really was the Patriarch of Venice. Paul VI really did have fleur-de-lis on his crest. My favorite are the eclipses. They really did happen on the dates of John Paul II's birth and funeral. But there's an eclipse somewhere on the Earth every 18 months. The thing is, an eclipse is not visible from everywhere on Earth, and the eclipses that are connected to Pope John Paul were invisible from where he was. Speaking of Pope John Paul II, the Vatican interpreted the Third Secret of Fatima as the violence of the 20th century, and the wounded pope as John Paul II, who survived being shot in 1981. The vision is real, the children reported it, and the Vatican published the text, but it's not connected to the prophecy at all. And the two popes theory? Well, that's been rejected and debunked. Benedict was alive, he rejected it, and the theory outlived him anyway. So if the prophecy wasn't a prophecy, then what was it? Probably election propaganda. Remember in 1958, Francis Spellman portrayed himself as a shepherd and a sailor to fit the prophecy? He wasn't the first to try to manipulate an election. The prophecy was probably a forgery created by Cardinal Girolamo Simoncelli during the election of 1590. The next motto on the list reads, "From the Old City." Simoncelli's hometown was Orvieto, in Latin, the Old City. So he forges a prophecy and gets an endorsement from the world's leading papal scholar, Alfonso Chacon. Now maybe Chacon was in on it, maybe not. That's still debated. But it doesn't matter. Simoncelli lost.
He rigged the system and still lost? It sounds like Hillary...
Oh, you know the rules.
Right. We don't joke about the Clinton. Sorry. I couldn't help myself. Go ahead.
The prophecy of the popes has been failing for years. And every time it does, the prophecy gets an update to make it fit. The more interesting question is, why? Why are we so fascinated with the end of the world? I am. I love a disaster movie. Anything post-apocalypse, I'm in. Why? What's my problem? Well, different cultures will have different reasons for the end of the world. Religious cultures will have something like a final judgment, a cleansing catastrophe, a savior returning at the climax of history. More secular cultures use the same pattern, they just change the vocabulary. Nuclear Armageddon, super plague, AI takeover, climate apocalypse.
Those are all possible.
Yeah, but...
Except the climate thing.
Look, the climate is changing.
You go live in a pod and eat the bugs. If you need me, I'll be at a sizzler in Florida, eating a bone and ribeye and ignoring Bill Gates.
But the one thing all humans have in common is that we're unique and that we know for 100% certainty that we're going to die one day. We just don't know when or how. So even the most brave, stoic, peaceful person has this deep existential dread. We all have it. It's natural to worry. but we'd rather go out as part of some cosmic drama, not an accident or illness or some random event. We can't control how many days we have left, but we can control what we do with those days. So treat tomorrow like it exists. Learn something, love someone, do something that matters, build something that lasts. Don't focus on your death. Just focus on doing everything you can so that when it gets here, you don't have a single regret. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. My name is AJ. That's Hecklefish.
My motto is Tomeo Kankri Kettis. Fear the Crab Kit.
This has been the Y-Files. If you had fun or learned anything, he'd appreciate it if you could like, subscribe, comment, share. I know I'm a broken record, but that stuff really helps the channel. And like most topics we cover on the channel, today's was recommended by you, a lot of you. And thank you for this one. This was a fun one. If there's a story you'd like to hear or learn more about, go to thewyfiles.com/tips. Reach us on YouTube, send an email. You can find us. Send in your ideas. We are always looking for those. And if you enjoy these stories, check out my other show on the channel. It's called The Basement. It's a conversation show where I chat with the interesting people behind the episodes. Some of them you know, some you don't, but they're all people I find fascinating, and I think you will too. Experts on fun topics like the moon landing, hoax, the JFK conspiracy, the DMT laser code, all kinds of random stuff. And if there's someone you'd like to see on the show, let us know. We're on the hunt for good guests. Remember, The Y-Files is also a podcast. You can take us on the road. I upload at least twice a week. Episodes, campfire stories, interviews. It's called The Y-Files Operation Podcast. It's available everywhere you get your podcasts. While I've got your ear, check out our 24/7 stream of The Y-Files Backstage. Over there, we run episodes back-to-back with some fun content in between. And the live chat is more entertaining than the videos. It's a great community over there. I think you'd enjoy it. Special thanks to our patrons who make this channel possible. Every episode of The Y-Files is dedicated to my Patreon members. I couldn't do this without your support. And if you'd like to support the channel, keep us going, join this community, become a member on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get access to perks like seeing videos early with no commercials, exclusive merch, and 2 private live streams every week, all just for you. The whole Y-Files team is on the stream, and you're welcome to turn on your camera, ask a question, talk about anything you like. Another great way to support the channel is grab something for the Y-Files store.
Go grab a Hagamish t-shirt. Get a physical glove. You might think you'd stick your apocalyptic mug in or whatever you're sticking here. Since we're in the end of days, all the merch is limited edition, so all prices are double. Oh, grab a hoodie. Hoodie, squeezy animal. Oh, look, I would do it. Grab a squeezy animal talking. Hagamish, that's why for the apocalypse store.
But if you're going to buy merch, make sure you become a member on YouTube. YouTube members get 10% off everything in the Y-Files store forever, and it's only $3. So if you're going to spend $40 on Fistable coffee mugs, if you know, you know, or t-shirts, become a member, it pays for itself, and then just cancel. The coupon code is there to save you money, not make me money. Besides, all that revenue goes to the team. I don't touch it.
Yeah, keep that secret close to your gills, eh, Chief?
Those are the plugs, and that's going to do it. My throat is sore from all the takes trying to pronounce Latin. I hope it was worth it. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and know that you are appreciated.
A secret code inside the Bible said I was. I love my UFOs and paranormal fun, as well as music, so I'm singing like I should. But then another conspiracy theory becomes the truth, my friends, and it never ends. No, it never ends. And got stuck inside Mel's home with MK Ultra, being only too aware. Did Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landing alone on a film set, or were the shadow people there? The Roswell aliens just fought the smiling man, I'm told, and his name was Cold. And I can't believe I'm dancing with the Hecklefish on Thursday nights with AJ too, and the Y-Files have got it all through the night. All I ever wanted was to just hear the truth, so the Y-Files are repeat all through the night.
The Mothman sightings and the solar storm still come to Agartha, the secret city underground. Mysterious number stations, planet Serpo 2, Project Stargate, and what the Dark Watchers found.
In a simulation, don't you worry though,
the Black Knight satellite, it's told me so. I can't believe I'm dancing with the fish. Heck of fish on Thursday nights with AJ2 and
camel love.